You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Monday's episode of a Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host for this episode, Craig Fowler, and I am joined in person by Tony Anderson.
Hi, Craig.
And Robert Borthwick.
Hello, Craig and Tony.
Hello, guys. How's it going? Rob, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, man. Thriving.
Oh, nice.
I don't know. I'm fine. honestly, I thought I just needed to add some sauce on that, when in reality I could just say, yeah, I'm fine and moved on.
Tony, are you thriving? Or?
I don't think I'm ever the kind of guy who's thriving.
you're surviving.
I'm quite well, but in the background, huddling on for dear life.
Yeah, Tony loves to exist. How are you?
I'm good.
No, that's
I'm
good.
Feeling good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah. What have you been up to, Craig? You were in Malaga recently. I know that.
Yeah, I was in Malaga recently. Aye.
What were you doing there? You saw the madness of Hearts.
Yeah,
that was,
I saw the madness
firsthand.
Of Hearts. Me and Robert Martin got pissed a few times, and yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to say that's taxpayers' money, but I'm assuming the taxpayer doesn't pay for the end of the evening news and the Scotsman.
The taxpayers died.
Further out of Malaga.
And yeah, we won't mention anything else I got up to in Malaga. That's fine.
No, what happened in Malaga, stay in Malaga.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not beds. Yeah, no beds has been saying since the 1992.
Exactly.
Nobody said it before then.
No. People did people go lads' holidays in the 80s? I suppose they did.
Probably, aye, but not.
Magic lads' holidays started.
Maybe not to Malaga.
To be fair, I think the trend of going abroad with the lads is something that's a bit more recent.
Yeah, is that 90s?
That feels 90s.
It does feel 90s. So in the 80s, what did you do? You just go to the pub with the lads.
Used to be like Jolly Boys, like you would go on a bus to like some seaside resort or some pitch like that.
You would just, you'd go for pints in the local and not talk about your feelings. That's what you do in the 80s. times have changed.
We're getting to the stage where I wish that would come back.
Tony loves to exist.
And nowadays we go abroad and then we sit in the pub and talk about how our mental health's fucked.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
With a Madri, then everything's fine.
Ah, exactly. Look after your men's mental health with a Madri.
Right, we should probably talk about four Scottish Premiership games that happened across the weekend.
Talk about men's mental health.
And Thursday evening as well. And in fact, we'll begin on Thursday evening with the... Let me think through the other ones. Yeah, let's say the most entertaining game of the lot. It was Rangers 3, Hibs 2, Hibs twice taking the lead, but Rangers getting the 3 points at Ibrox after Hibs, who were very impressive in the first half, didn't do anything after the break. Yeah. We'll get on to talking about Michael Beale, as it was his first match in charge of Rangers, but Tony, let's start with the visitors first. What did you make of Hibs? And Ryan Porteous, not only his goal celebration, but also playing in midfield.
Yeah, it's all happening. It's like Lee Johnson knew that there had to be something. Couldn't just have him popped back in at centre-half. That would be ludicrous. That's not what we're here for with Ryan Porteous. It must be box office. But he seemed to... Ryan Porteous in midfield is one of those things, talking of pub chat, that I've heard Hibs fans mention over the years, because some of his... sort of biggest attributes are is on the ball, and obviously he enjoys a tackle, he's combative, so you can see where that would maybe come from. And in fairness, you normally like turn your nose up when people talk like that, but to be honest, it did seem to suit him all right. I'm interested to know like your point of view on that.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, it's like John Souter syndrome, isn't it? It's like, oh, look, there's a defender who can play football. Play him in midfield. And then it's like, that's basically been said since the beginning of time with ball playing centre-halves who come through academies at Scottish Premiership teams. But I mean, it is kind of true for Ryan Porteous. His passing range has always been very, very strong. In the midfield, he's not more susceptible to rush out of position, which is what he's been doing since he came into the Hibs top team. It's something he's not really ever been able to get out of his system in terms of concentration. It actually helps the team a wee bit in that way, because you've got more cover if he's playing in the centre of the park. At the same time, he's a very, very good and getting better centre-half. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of losing something from that aspect of it as well. But again, on top of that, Rocky Bashiri has been excellent at centre-half this season for Hibs. So again, you've kind of got the cover there. So.
But Paul Hanlon has not.
Yeah, no. We'll come on to that. But
I didn't mention it.
There was a point during this game where I thought, there's only one good centre-half in this entire football game, and he's playing in midfield.
Yeah.
Because like Sands and Lundstrom were not having a good time whatsoever. And Paul Hanlon, a guy who's had so many ups and downs, false dawns, early sort of people wanting to force him at the door, but it is getting to the stage where it's like, Paul, you've left the oven on, maybe you need to get yourself up the road, and then everyone moves pub before he comes back.
Yeah.
He was really going for his pub metaphor, aren't we?
He was sort of like at fault in so many different ways for each goal. So it's like seeing the whole sort of pandemic of Paul Hanlon's issues.
The full Paul Hanlon experience.
Yeah, and because obviously the first goal, like the header.
Yes,
it's like so bad. And even though Hibs score right from it, I was in the pub watching this, I've never seen that happen before. It come back, and it was certainly not for a Hibs perspective, and everyone's going wild again. But you even see Lee Johnson isn't even celebrating the goal. He's still berating Paul Hanlon because he can't afford to do that at Ibrox.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's like, if you go to Ibrox, then you, and especially this is my Heart of Midlothian scars showing here, but they're always going to get numerous chances. Mm. And the key thing is, you don't give them easy ones. They're going to get chances anyway. No. You don't give them easy ones, because that is exactly when they can get on top of you. You know, everything starts happening in their favour. Hibs did incredibly well, obviously, to absolutely, you know, change that in the first half anyway. You know, have that sort of cushion and that bumper. But as the second half wore on, like Craig was saying, it's like they didn't do anything in the second half other than bad things. And that is always, always, always going
to
hurt you.
It was what was really frustrating about it is I could see what Johnson wanted to do. I mean, Hibs were playing really, really quick on the turn. It was very much, there was not much holding on to the ball in midfield. It was very much trying to get these weak centre halves. Obviously, Devine playing at fullback in one of his first ever starts. Tavernier, obviously, is going to be pushing on. There's so many gaps that were going to be there, and I thought it was a smart way for Hibs to play. I mean, Juan started, who he's not fancied for a while. There's a reason for that. He was thinking pace. There's pace, directness. So you could see exactly what he was thinking, and to be fair to Johnson, he pulled it off. But his biggest issue is that he never once looked to change that, despite the fact the game had completely changed on its head.
But you're looking at Eli Ewan starting, and you're kind of thinking, right, this is the first post-Martin Boyle game of the season for Hibs. Is this now what it's going to look like? You've essentially set up a team and a system to have that blistering pace, someone who can run in behind on the attack and get through on goal. He is now the guy, because Martin Boyle unfortunately doesn't exist for the rest of the season, and that's got to be something that maybe needs addressed in the January transfer window, because Juan, for as much as he has had some moments, he's not got the consistency that Martin Boyle has.
He doesn't seem to have the mentality, does he, to be able to cut it in Scottish football?
Not at all.
He doesn't have the heart for the fight.
Neither did Martin Boyle until he did, to be fair.
I don't know, Boyle would always... They'll do the classic Scottish thing of run around and make yourself a nuisance. But that does help you in Scottish football. And if you're not willing to put in the hard graft, then it's just, you're not going to last very long. And Juhan, pretty much from you can maybe say from the start, because he was very poor in that first game against St Johnstone, but there was kind of a feeling that he wasn't quite fit. And then he showed some flashes. That was very flashy.
Hearts and Rangers.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And second half against Livy as well. He was very good. But since then, so that's all in August. Since August. What has he done?
Well, when that weather, see, this is the problem. I really don't want to get into the bit where there's almost a bit of xenophobia and maybe even racism when you talk about Juan, because you can get into, we're going to be using buzzwords like laziness. I mean, going by his Instagram, there's a lot of like videos of him scoring offside goals and with hip hop music behind it and all that. I'm like, really, like, oh, that is quite cringy from football. And I'm getting this awful feeling that for Eli Juan, it's all about Eli Juan.
Well, I wouldn't say that this next point I'm going to make, it goes against the racism part, but it doesn't, not against the xenophobia part. Him and Elias Melkerson, just both of them, just like pea hearted. Like, yeah. Really. Just not in it for a fight whatsoever. And you need to be able to battle to a certain extent.
Aye, but also that comes down to the management of the player as well. That, you know, that has to come from the manager.
What, you tell me these WhatsApps aren't working? No.
You sit them down and you say, listen, if you want to survive in this league, if you want to play for this football
club,
you
need to do
these things.
Is that the problem? Elihu's got notifications turned off.
Exactly, exactly.
He's none of these messages.
But he had bad mental health, so he jumped out the WhatsApp.
But that's what it takes. And I think that obviously with Lee Johnson, previously with Sean Maloney from Elkerson as well, maybe they're not the guys to instill that sort of battling, winning mentality into younger guys coming to a new country who you need to make understand the way that football works here very rapidly, otherwise they'll disappear.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the big performers for Hibs away from Ryan Porteous, obviously Cabraja had probably one of his best games in a while, especially
Get him at the door.
Yeah, exactly.
Door.
Yeah,
and now he's not again. So it's like fish. Way. One day he's gone, then he's back. And Cabraja's gone. I mean, I've heard all sorts. I don't want to get into about the relationship between Cabraja and the manager, but it sounds like that's been, if that's true, it's been put to bed, because it sounds like he's playing now. His stats were good, according to McPartlin, and if there's anyone who appreciates a stat, it sounds like it's Lee Johnson, because he'll keep Kyle McGuinness on if his underlying stats are good. And Cabraja, he was going to send him home, and now his stats were good, so now he's playing every week. So
give him a new deal.
That's great. And then we had the return of Kevin Nisbet, and he showed, like, just right away, Hibs having a striker who is... Because Hibs strikers, they all can do different things, but none of them really seem to be good at finishing.
Yeah.
And then Nisbet comes in one chance, and it's like, what, it happens so quickly that you really need to be such a composed striker in that scenario, and it's a brilliant finish, and that's Nisbet up and running again. And you're like, that's huge for Hibs, because without Boyle, you're like, and at least Nisbet is a known quality. That I know he had a bad period, but I think we all know he's relaxed, and he is definitely good enough to lead the line for a Premiership team.
By the time a lot of people listening to this, we should say that we were a day late because there were logistical problems, I think we could say.
Well, I locked myself at my house.
Let's call. There you go.
I locked myself out and then had to go to Karen Mills to get keys from Mandy, and then come all the way back. I had to cancel about three separate things because it was still 3 hours before we were meeting. We had so much on. I'm like, does it come across well? When you're like, I've just locked myself at my house, mate. Just sounds like a lie from the word go. Like, no matter who you speak to, not good enough. So I was posting missing for a lot of things, but not quite as much as the Rangers defence.
Well,
I came back from
Malaga, the first time back in my house in 3 months, and I locked myself out. Well, technically I didn't lock myself out, but I did. Well, I did forget to bring my key.
I don't think
I thought you were going to say the locks have been changed. That'll be like, that's exactly.
I don't think I've ever locked myself out of anything.
They're not, you've got a reasonable brain then.
I've done it fucking loads.
Jesus Christ.
I've had to call a locksmith like about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times in my life.
Christ. Well, nah, fair play. I did like the, I've done the sort of opposite. I once gave directions to burglars to my house. that was a low.
There was one time when I was younger.
Sorry, can we just move on for that? I need to have context.
Do you want the full story?
Yeah, I'll do that.
My mum and dad's, I was about 15 or 16 at the time or something, and my sister worked at the corner shop at the top of the road, and I was going up, so
I'd be stealing it all the time if I was you.
So my niece was like 4 months old at the time. I was looking after her and she was crying, so I was like, right, I'll take you up to see your mum. So I got her in the buggy. Little did I know, the corner shop had just been robbed and Alex's bag had been taken that had her driver's license with the address on it and the keys to my mum and dad's house. And some boys in a wee Citroen Saxo pulled up next to me and was like, listen, mate, whereabouts is Comiston Springs? And I was like, oh, it's just over there. It's like, they basically directed them into my house and they made sure that I was away for just long enough that I didn't find them when I got back. So that's what happened. I directed them to the house.
So
that feels like that's not really your fault.
Was it boys were like hooped jumpers and swag bags being like,
I feel the biggest problem is that Robert wasn't prepared for the fact a 4-month old baby might cry. Oh, give it back to its mum, I can't handle this.
Listen, I was fully prepared. I was like, right, the buggy's there, I'm gonna take it. It's like, I knew
buggies
exactly
are hard to fall down as well,
so. I knew exactly what I was doing.
My dad was away on holiday and I had an empty and I had a fucking mental house party.
Shock.
I was only about 16 and somebody threw up all over the bathroom as well, and I managed to lock
Shock.
It wasn't me for the change. I managed to lock myself out at night. So I was like, fuck, that's like, the place is an absolute state.
Oh, no,
somebody's been sick all over
already
the bathroom. My dad was near, I think he was back until either late the Sunday or the Monday. So me and my mate at the time, we went to B&Q, got a new letterbox, got the other one taken off, got a screwdriver, took the other letterbox off, got his wee sister to stick her hand, arm in the door and open the door for us so we could get back in. At which point she got stuck. It was just, we just ignored her and she was lying there for what must have been about 15 minutes.
Jesus
just
Christ.
With her arm trapped in my door.
What, through the letterbox?
Aye. As we went about and started to clean the house up, she's like greeting in the background. Like, shut up. We eventually got
that
some
pains in the post.
We eventually got some fairy liquid. Some fairy liquid and threw it all over her arm and eventually got her out.
Throw it all over her head, that'll help. Forever blow bubbles.
And then me messaging my, after cleaning him up, me messaging my dad, see when you come back, didn't be too freaked out, there's a different letterbox. But anyway, Rangers.
Yeah.
So they're played tonight. By the time this guy, by the time most people hear this, they would have already played Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. But Rob, what did you think of Michael Beale's first game?
To be honest with you, it's kind of like when Beale came back in and he gave the sort of mission statement. It's like, we're going to play entertaining football. We're going to score goals and win games. That's kind of what happened. Like, mm-hmm. they conceded. And again, a lot of that is down to the defence of Devine Sands and Lundstrom.
For a free header, that is something else. He's got nobody in the circumference of him in the box.
That was wild. But again, it's like I think under Beale, Rangers are not to the same extent, but they're going to get closer to Postecoglou's Celtic than they are to Van Bronckhorst's Rangers, which is essentially more swashbuckling, getting the ball forward quickly, trying to win possession high up the park and then score goals in that way. And the goals that they scored, I mean, it's very poor defending from a Hibs point of view, but at the same time, the third goal, Tillman does brilliantly, lovely feet, and then there's Morelos. There's Morelos where Morelos should be at all times. And I think that under Van Bronckhorst, Morelos almost seemed receded sometimes. He came out looking for the ball too often. He was in the six-yard box. It's a tap-in. That's an Alfredo Morelos goal. So you can see elements of what's coming, obviously.
Right away, straight away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The system hasn't changed that much, but the style is changing, and that's kind of what you're looking for.
Those guys were more narrow than probably what they were under Van Bronckhorst. He liked his proper wingers, Van Bronckhorst, didn't he?
But Fashion Sakala is not a proper winger, so that's not the way to play him. Playing him more centrally and allowing him to then have opportunities, running into the box, using his pace to get past his man just over 5 yards and get a shot away, which is what his goal was as well. You know, it's playing to the player's strengths more than trying to play to a system. And I think that, again, that is something that it will take time. It'll take work, obviously. He came in just part of the way through the break, didn't he? So he's not had like a full mid-season, if you want to call it that. But Rangers will be improved. They're not going to win the league. They're not going to get anywhere near that. But they'll be well improved, I think, under Michael Beale, because his style suits Scottish football better than Van Pronckhorst's style did. And all you need to do is look across the city to see the proof of that.
And you see, you mentioned Malik Tillman. He was probably the star of the show.
Definitely. I really like Tillman, and I think it's instantly with Beale that he wants to keep him, and he sort of like made that a really sort of, it's not a guy that he was involved in bringing in either. So he's come back and he's instantly earmarked him as a top quality player that Rangers should be signing. And I think that tells you a lot, because he'll just, we spoke about it in the season when they were playing in Europe. It was like so perfect. He played with his back to the game. He scored so much to his match. I mean, that game that they won away in Holland, he was superb, and he was like holding the ball up. He had, people were touched tight to him, and he was being creative. And then this game, he was rolling over to the right, and as you said, for the goal, he was so creative in there to get it. And he's so strong. The only thing he lacks is pace, yeah. Which is the reason that Rangers will be able to sign him, frankly.
And that's kind of it. He's that sort of quality player, whereas his feet and the way he uses his body is so impressive that he doesn't really need pace half the time. And even then, he can still break through the midfield.
He's got acceleration, because there's a difference. So
yeah, but he's still got enough strength to essentially, if he needs to make that 10 yards between centre circle and D, then he'll make that quite easily and take players on at the same time. Just because the level and the weight of his touch is always so good, he can get past his man and give himself that space.
How good is it for the individual and possibly for the national team with Beale being back with Ryan Jack? I mean, he's instantly put him back in the team. He was very much a favourite under both Beale and Gerrard.
They've already said as well that there's talk of him now getting what they call a contract for life. Basically means it'll be the end of his career, because he's already...
Because his legs are fucked.
Well, aye, I was going to say, aye.
He's got a six-month deal.
Until he retires in the summer.
But I mean, that's massive for Jack, because under Van Bronckhorst, he was only going one way and it was out of range. Rangers,
yeah.
And due to his performances this season, you were starting to get to stage where he's maybe not going to get to go. He'll be taking a downward step. But now, if he gets the stick and with a manager really fancy him, I think when you're a guy a bit as vulnerable as Jack in terms of injuries, then you do need a manager to really have faith in you and know how to use you for your career to get any sort of longevity and for him to stay at a club of Rangers sort of stature. But again, the way Beale's talking, Scottish players is something he wants to have there, and you'd be no point in letting Jack go and try to bring in others because they're ones that are as accessible. They're not really, because, I mean, a lot of the Scottish midfielders at the moment that are ready-made, they're not going to be playing for Rangers. They're already playing for sort of in better leagues.
Right, let's move on to our second game of the weekend, and let's go with the most impressive result, I would say, and that is St Johnstone defeating Ross County 2-1 away from home. St Johnstone were one goal down for the majority of this game, but a red card to Ross County. I would say I did manage to catch all this game. I was planning on watching, and my house had a power cut. So that paid to that not long after the red
card. Locked yourself out the meter.
Actually, it was a fucking nightmare trying to get the meter open because of the kind of work that the house had been like all painted. It's like where the meter was. So I had to get a knife and like cut out these bits of paint. They were like sawing the door closed.
So he says, he actually had a party. Someone was sick all over it.
All over the meter.
I was going at the street, like knocking on neighbours' doors to find out if anybody else had it, but nobody was home. So I was like, I don't know. Eventually I phoned up and got the answer. But anyway, yeah, I couldn't watch all of this. But so the red card played a part. Ross County were 1-0 up at that time.
Yeah.
But I would say from watching it that the, and Tony, I know you saw this game, that the tide was starting to swing anyway towards St Johnstone.
Yeah, definitely. In reality, I think St Johnstone started the game a lot better than Ross County as well. I mean, I think this might be unfashionable to say about St Johnstone, but I think they were shown to be the much more ambitious team. They were playing with three at the back, but they had Brown and Considine pushed relatively far forward compared to Ross County, who it says they were playing three at the back, but I really felt they were playing four. I felt that, what's his name, Harmon, is it number 16, was it Harmon? Yeah. I felt like he was more playing left back and Johnson was out right, and they had Iacovitti and Baldwin playing.
It's still the same. It's the same County I talked about before, where it's kind of, it's between a four and a three. And
yeah,
it's kind of like I said before, like Brendan Rodgers Celtic side.
Yeah, and Ogbali was dropping into the left-hand side rather than playing centre forward. He was seeing a lot of that, and he was having what some would call a fucking nightmare for large periods, especially of the first half, where nothing was coming off for him. But yeah, so Johnstone, they were the final ball was letting them down, but I still felt that they were the much more ambitious team. Dan Phillips had a very interesting game. I was getting myself a bit confused because he's one of those players, right, you cannot not see him on the park. He's got this really like unique running style. He's like really small, like a square. So he like scatters about the pitch, but he sits quite deep, which I think, again, worked against St Johnstone at some point, which I might come on to. But he was getting on the ball, and he must have got as many touches as anyone. I've not checked that, but he was so involved all the time, but not always in a positive sense.
But then he was so heavily involved in the winning goal.
Absolutely.
And it was just a lovely drop of the shoulder was all it took. And that, again, that just shows like that, you know, you don't have to be great for 90 minutes, but if you can be great for 1 minute and win the game, then that's all you need.
He's definitely got, especially for St Johnstone, who they are starting to get their midfield back. They're Carey and Witherspoon in there, and with Phillips. And I mean, I spoke about this just before the break, saying that with St Johnstone getting these players back, that midfield went from being like one of the most turgid midfields you could ever come across to suddenly like, well, actually, maybe they think it's Larkin's bite. these are like loads of really, really like sort of nice players. But Phillips did have a nice blend. But the one thing I worry about is his physicalities. He can't get around the pitch quickly. He's, being fair, probably a bit overweight, and he's in the way. So I worry that he's to sit that deep and spray the ball. I'm not sure he's talented enough to do that, like sort of dictate the play. He's also a good tackler, but he's not fit enough to run around and put out the fires. So I'm worried that even though he was good in this game, overall he's going to end up being an in-between player, and it'll be, some people will think he's quite good. He'll be that one, you know, the fans will argue about him in the pub, and it'll be like what type of player you appreciate will be whether you actually rate Phillips. He gets caught quite deep for the goal. He sort of like, and then the goal that St Johnstone lose is fucking criminal when you're playing with three centre halves. Jordan White's the only kind of goal Jordan White's going to be able to score.
I mean, Jan Danda puts in a good ball.
It's a lovely ball.
It's a lovely ball in, but it's a training exercise. Yeah, you know, where's the big striker in the middle? Manager's telling the defence to stand off him a bit, give him some confidence, let him head it into the bottom corner. That's what it was. They all stood off the one striker that Ross County had, which is absolutely criminal. And St Johnstone's back line is something that, you know, the constituent parts have been fairly impressed by all season, to be honest. And that was a huge, huge letdown for them. But
Take a Mitchell out of that team, you could see it right away. Because Mitchell and the goalie both out, and they had to go with El Pa, as I think the commentators were calling him. Parrish is now the goalkeeping coach. And I liked listening to the pod the other week that was explaining why he was going to be good. Because he's a shit goalkeeper. And that'll make him a good, but yeah, goal. I mean, Brown can see his number, and then Gordon's out, and he's in between the two of them, and it's a deep cross where the guy takes time to measure it because nobody's really pressing him. It was a really, really poor goal for him to lose. And but again, it's credit St Johnstone. I mean, again, the tide was already turning, but that's the second time this season with a red card, and they've absolutely blitzed the opposition in that little 10-minute period after it.
Yeah, but Ali Crawler coming off the bench as well and making a massive impact. Scoring twice. Not only scored twice, but actually playing well.
Another player that's going to get added to the we all say shite, and then actually plays for St Johnstone now, so he's good. They're like the new Livingston. Whatever, it doesn't matter who they bring in, he's suddenly good.
Actually, this is going to be slightly to it. I thought Ross County played quite reasonably well in the first half. I thought it was quite an even contest. And I would actually say that County had the better of the first 7 minutes when, like, St Johnstone just couldn't seem to get anything to start, really. But then they did manage to kind of come in it. And from that point on, I think the first half was quite even, with County maybe scoring slightly against the run of play.
Yeah, but also St Johnstone done nothing in terms of front of goal until Dre Wright put in that deep cross that may divert towards, and then Clark missed the Witherspoon cut it back, the Witherspoon chop that I was a St Johnstone commentators would not stop talking about. Okay, he played in the World Cup. I get it. I really, really, really do. And he cuts it back, and then Clark sort of blazed over the bar. I did think that was one of Clark's poorer games that I've seen him.
It didn't do much of the 60-odd minutes that I saw. The County goal, I think, is everything that was good about their first half performance, and that Jordan, I think it's Harmon that plays it down the line. He was getting forward quite well in the first half. Jordan White does well to not give up on what seemed like a lost clause. Like, it looks like it's actually maybe out, but he manages to just hook it.
A lost clause. Very festive.
I know, right?
Damn it. And then Aguero Edwards, he manages to win it back. He was quite lively in that opening period as well. He really disappeared after the break. But crucially, he wins it back but doesn't put the cross in. because he's very... He's very busy. Yeah. He's very quick. And he's good at running the ball. He's good at taking it from A to B. And he frightens defenders, but he doesn't actually ever do anything.
The Brandon Barkers.
Bit of the Brandon Barkers about him. And Jan Danda, I think, he was getting into good pockets of space around the final third and managing to ask questions of St Johnstone that way. And it was him that put in the cross. But yeah,
he's a nice sweet player, eh?
Yes.
He's going to strike me a bit as a fair weather player again. The second they went gone, it was like, you'll be coming off now.
100%. I mean, when they signed him in the summer, I was surprised because I'd seen him playing for Swansea and thought, this boy's got quite a lot about him. And then he didn't really start many games to start with. I was like, oh no, I don't think he's acclimatised well to this, if I'm being honest. But then before the break, started more games, obviously started this game. And this is what I expected from him. His range of passing, his crossing is really, really good. He's a creative player. And if Ross County can get that out of him, then
his touch as well is very good.
Yeah, he's a good footballer. And Ross County, could do with some of them.
Which you're talking about with Edwards, like the two wide men that were playing in this, they're frustrating to watch. They run up blind alleys and stuff now. So you do need, they can be very helpful players, but you do need to add a bit of quality. Somebody can maybe take advantage of the fact that they've carried that ball and they've got pace and they've got directness.
Now, if you're a County fan or if you're Malky Mackay or, the rest of the team, you have to be absolutely spewing with that red card.
Baldwin.
I mean, to lose a man in such ridiculously easy circumstances.
What do you love about football, though, that?
I think he just changed so much in an instant.
Just on that innocuous moment.
I watched the replay so many times to see if I could blame the goalkeeper for it. It's like, surely it's his fault, but no. Terrible touch from Baldwin. Stevie May is always, always, always going to be there and thereabouts. If you're taking a touch with your back to play and you're playing against St.
John's, he's just sitting back there.
There's no way he's letting you do that. And it was a poor touch. And then, I mean, it doesn't take much or really any contact. As soon as you put any arm on him when he's going through on goal like that, it's a red card. Absolutely no doubt about it. And yeah, like you said, Tony, for 10 minutes, St. Johnson just absolutely blitzed it. They saw the opportunity, smelt blood, and they got the ball into the box more often. They flooded forward. I think the winning goal is kind of the best way to look at that. Everyone is making a forward movement into the box. No one's staying still. And then it falls to Theo Bear's shot. It falls to Ali Crawford. And
what a finish that is.
It's a lovely finish. I mean, the first goal was a great finish as well because he's getting pulled back. But the second one, it takes some skill to be able to do that when you've got so much pressure around about you. The ball's coming at you that quickly. Not a fair play to Ali Crawford.
Well, mate, that goal, what it does to someone. So like, you can see like this now, we're seeing Ali Crawford when he's feeling at his best.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like, well, this guy's more than... And we have seen it before. Ali Crawford is... We have seen him excel in this league.
Goal scorer midfielder. That's what he was at Accies. And that's what he should be at St. Johnstone. He's not done it quite yet. And I think when he got a new deal, a few people were maybe a bit surprised. But if he's going to do that and win games, then why not?
Because just now you're looking, as I said, with Carey, Crawford. I mean, there's loads. Witherspoon, Sank, yeah. And mine. If they all score one goal in five games, you know, if they all become six goal a season, that means they're all basically scoring, one of them scoring nearly every game, you know, and that's really what you need from your midfield. And you start thinking, that midfield's got a lot more about it than other midfields, if guys like Crawford are going to be what you remember they were.
Yeah, I think St. John's deserve a lot of credit. Look at where they are in the table. That's not a fluke.
Just about to say, they are a point off of third place.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That's it. Fair play.
Yeah, they've got the mentality. I'm still not entirely sure they've got the talent, but they've got the mentality.
100%. Yeah, which they absolutely did not have last season.
But again, going back to Davidson, I mean, I've heard you guys talk about this on a podcast a few times. Like, would he be better with a director of football who brings some better players in? Or does he need the players to be slightly limited to buy into his style and to do the sort of work? I mean, I always get confused with it. I always want to... because. Like the names on the paper, they are shit signings. Like St. Johnson fans, even if they can lie to themselves, when these players are coming in, they're not sitting in their room going, great. They're not. That's a fucking great signing. They're not. There's no way. That, like, I'm not having it. They're sensible men, I'm sure. And then, would he be better with a director of football who brings them in maybe better quality players, or would they just not be willing to do the way that Cam Davidson wants? I'm always confused. It's tough when a manager's only been at one club to really be able to pin him down.
They did have a head of recruitment and that didn't last long, so...
No.
That was when it went bad and he got relegated, so maybe that does tell you. Maybe he was bigger than great players.
Cam Davidson can't work with good players. Only work with bad players.
Yeah. I mean, it's a narrative I'm going to spin now. Rather give St. Johnston credit, I'll create this whole narrative.
He purposely goes out and thinks, right, if Park Thistle signed this guy, would anybody be surprised? No, then I'll have him.
Then I'll have him. He's mine.
And he's going to be great.
Work his bloody socks off for me.
Right, let's get to... Let's go with the most talked about kind of
anti-football
subplot at the weekend. Yes, Aberdeen's performance against Celtic in their 1-0 defeat. So on the one hand, it nearly works. Callum McGregor scores in the 87th minute. It takes a very good shot from the edge of the area in order to beat Kel Roos.
Wait, that sounds when it hits the net.
Yeah, oh, well, very nice finish.
Crisp.
However, Celtic had 33 shots with 81% possession, and Aberdeen had two shots. And if you can't work out the possession, then there's no hope for you.
If I was an Aberdeen fan, I'd be fuming.
I see.
I'd be fuming.
Yeah, even if it works, I'd be fuming.
Listen, it's just fucking Celtic. Yeah. Like, honestly, it's like you're not playing against Real Madrid at home. You're playing against Celtic, a Celtic team who hasn't played in a month.
But the gap is a gap between Aberdeen and Celtic, not the same between Celtic and Real Madrid.
Shut up, Craig.
Is it not a fair question?
And did Celtic not play Real Madrid and go at them at Celtic Park and just about got a result out of it? Listen.
They're not going to be 4-1 or so.
It's the... eventually, Tony.
But they did have chances. You can get something.
That's what I'm saying. And I think that if you're an Aberdeen fan, you're seeing yourself as third position, clear in third in the league. You have a pop. You have a go at the Old Firm at home. Why not? Why wouldn't you do that? Because look at what Hibs did against Rangers earlier on in the season. Look at what Hearts nearly did against Celtic. Great game, the 4-3 one. You go at them and you'll get chances because that is the nature of how Celtic play football. They're going to give the ball away sometimes and you've got players like Duck and Majovski that can make a difference up the other end of the park.
Perfect player for that style.
100%. And I think that the way that they went into it, just looking for a draw. They weren't even looking to counter-attack. They were doing nothing. Conor Barron, I think, progressed the ball 3 times in the match. That was it. That's all they had. It was...
And that's a forward-thinking midfield player.
It was turgid. And listen, you can say, oh, but it nearly worked. It took until the 86th minute and a great goal and Aberdeen were just about going to get a point. Who cares? No Aberdeen fan would have come away from that game happy with a point because what they just watched for 90 minutes was horrific. Mm.
That's that. Your kind of general point is kind of what I was saying earlier in the season when they hold Lee Johnson thing, where he said like teams go out and they're already beaten by the Old Firm because of we've been used to it since they were 10 years old, but also our under 16s are really good at beating them. So and that doesn't make any sense.
And the thing is, you can try and look at the
positives. That's what happens because there is that wealth gap that you could say, okay, it is almost like playing Real Madrid at home because of how much money that Celtic can turn over compared to every other team in the league. But we don't accept that in Scotland.
No.
If they come to our ground, we won't have a go at them.
Also, you're not playing against their accountants. Like, you're not playing against, like, it's not money versus money. You're playing 11 versus 11, and it fucking annoyed me.
You can play in stages as well. You see, like, these things, you go with these game plan and tactics, it only takes one moment, and then the game's up the fucking pole. I mean, like, how little opportunity are you going to be to get... Because what's the idea? Is it Goodwin saying now this is how he's going to play in every single match against them? Because that's what... And that, the same thing, the majority of the time, they'll get beat 3-0. The other... So the rest of the time, they'll get beat 1-0 like that. And then there'll be once in every 20 or 30 where he gets the 0-0. That's shit. You might as well get beat 3-0, 4-0. And then eventually pick up 3 points. Or eventually pick up a draw that people can enjoy and have a bit of pride over. Because there's so little to gain from playing like that. And the likelihood is they've got so much quality. They are going to score. They are. And they did. They did. So
maybe a case? I'm looking at their team here, and there's a lot of talent in this team. But then I look at the back line, and I'm like, is it a case that he's playing like this at the moment because their defence isn't that good, and that if you're going to have a go at Celtic, you need a solid back line.
Possibly, but I think I worry that I think he got his fingers burnt at Ibrox before the break, and he mentions that, and I think he was on whatever his post match. And you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So that would make me think more that he sort of hurt himself a bit when he went to Ibrox, had a goal, got the plaudits, but they got beat 4-1. But again, the playing in stages, this is what I was talking about with Hibs. They sat too deep in the second half and they didn't try and keep the ball for a little while. It's the same, but they played in moments where they would get them turning. You do that. You play in the same, you have different moments and you've got different tactics for different periods of the game. You don't just go one way of playing, because it stung Johnson in the end because he'd went for it and it stung him. The exact same thing, except that Johnson done it in one half and he's done it for the full 90 minutes. Same thing's happened. And as I said, I always think of managers when they talk about playing these better teams, is they always talk about the sections of the game and how they plan on hurting them. When we get the ball in this area, we think they've got a weakness, so that is when we maybe will commit. And that's the thing you've got to do, because you can't just sit there and not even keep possession of the ball. Never even mind trying to score goals, or not even keeping the ball for any sort of length of time to give anyone a rest. Eventually someone, which in this case is Barron, gets caught too deep and he isn't able to go and face the ball, and Cal McGregor puts in a great strike. So I just think there's so much, you've really got fuck all to gain. And I know you'll say, I've got a point to gain. In the grand scheme of things, might not even get you anywhere. Apart from a pissed off fan base.
No, I mean the Aberdeen fans that I follow on Twitter, maybe a slight echo chamber of Aberdeen fans, I don't know, but none of them were happy at this. I don't think anyone could have... the fans watching at home were annoyed enough. Imagine being there. I was thinking the entire time I was watching it, imagine that was a Hearts performance at Tynecastle against Celtic.
Half 12, I'd been at a game in a month.
I would have left at 0-0. I would have. Honestly, it's not how you do it. And then it's like you get the occasional, oh Christ, Aberdeen have it in Celtic's half. Oh look, well, that's them got the ball back now. Oh, every single Aberdeen player's just ran back into their own box. Like those fucking charity things when you get 100 kids to play against Dundee's first team. Like that's what it was. It was just like, you can try and look at the positives, right? They defended okay for 86 minutes. Even then, it took a very good goal. They defended okay. But if you put 11 men inside your own box, the likelihood is you'll probably defend okay because you've got enough bodies in the way. But even then, Celtic missed some bad, like some really good chances.
Like they were Kyogo, still making, yeah.
Kyogo going at it with his shin instead of his foot. Like that should have been 1-0, and that was what, 50th minute or something like that. Would Aberdeen have changed the way they played after that? Who knows? It was pathetic.
Because, I mean, they've got the players that you're talking about the defence, but I'm just thinking of it, looking at the team, is that you've got McCrory there who can come out and sort of ruffle feathers by driving out with the ball and sort of like displacing maybe some Celtic players like that. And then you've got Ramadani who can maybe then who can sit in. Do you understand what I mean? They've got bits where they can do these things and they can use the sort of pros of their own players to cause them bother. And then, as I said, with Lopez up front, with Duke, I mean, you've got like the ideal player possibly in the league for counter-attacking. It's ideal. And you've got Clarkson in behind them who's really good on the ball, he's composed, he's got a strike. You get them together close, even three or four times in 90 minutes, you'll get a chance out of that, almost definitely.
Thing that annoyed me the most, Aberdeen have been superb at Pittodrie this season. Why not just play into that? They've been so good at Pittodrie. Honestly,
like fans buzzing. It's been a month.
Yeah, and they play great football. They score good goals. Majovski, Duke, all these Clarkson, like all the guys you just mentioned, they've all been able to light up Pittodrie this season, and that has been a massive, massive positive. That's why they are where they are in the league right now, and they abandoned that, and that just honestly, I feel my heart rate getting up here. I'm not even a fucking Aberdeen fan.
Like, I hate them.
it just annoyed me, but. On the flip side of that, fair play to Celtic. They never stop, they never do. Well, I know it's that horrible fucking saying.
A couple of Celtic players, but I think, to focus on were the two returning from injury, Callum McGregor and Carl Starfelt, who I felt were the best two players from the day.
Starfelt was brilliant. I was really sceptical about him when he first came in last season. I wasn't sure how he was going to fit in. I think he looked a wee bit dodgy. He's had a couple of injuries since then. Obviously, he's been kind of stop-start, but you can see his quality. And Callum McGregor, for me, is still the best midfielder in Scotland. I like watching him play. I love the way he wins the ball back. He never loses it when he's in possession. And he's got that left foot. He's got that potential to put in the bottom corner when it's needed. And he's you know, he has strode into that captain's armband off the back of Scott Brown leaving, and he's just made it his own. It was always going to be a difficult follow-up to you know, go after someone so iconic, someone so divisive, and what he's done is he's just come in and he's just basically made it his own. So yeah,
he's better than Scott Brown.
Yeah, better footballer.
Okay, let's move on to our final Premiership game from the weekend, and that was Hearts defeating Kilmarnock 3-1 on Saturday with an excellent first half performance. Second half wasn't that great, but 3 points in the end, and a deserved 3 points for the home side, Rob.
Yeah, it was a deserved 3 points in the end. You know, it wasn't a tale of two halves as such. I don't think Kilmarnock created all that much, to be honest, to make it seem like it was a really close contest. Scored a goal from a poor set piece from a Hearts point of view. I'll come on to that in a wee bit. But Hearts looked like they'd had a rest. And it looked like that's exactly what they needed after a really tough opening few months to the season. Spoke about it on the season review so far with Duncan Mackay. That October just about killed us, just about killed me, to be honest. Like, having to watch Hearts struggle for so many games in such a condensed period of time.
But you get used to it, sorry.
But you could properly see it in certain players who maybe weren't at their best earlier on in the season, Barry Mackay being one of them. Mackay's touch was back, his drive was back, his dribbling was back, and he was also creating opportunities again, which he hadn't really done. To be honest, it kind of became the undroppable man because of what he can produce on his day. But I thought he should have been dropped before the break.
Is there any correlation at all that Mackay is back to his best? Yeah, the break certainly helped, and that is an aspect of it, but also it's back to the 3-4-3. Mackay is a lot more central than he was out in the on the left wing.
You're not certain it was going to be four at the back.
I was even looking at the team because it made more sense, because you kind of thought if it was going to be a four at the back, then Toby Civic was going to play.
Yeah,
but he didn't. And to be fair, I know why Nielsen did that, and that this is a plan to play the 3-4-3 going forward, and Craig Halkett's going to have to play on the right of the defensive line, and if you're going to need that, then he's going to need to get the minutes and reps to get up to speed, because Robbie even said to me, this is a slight peek to an article coming out tomorrow, but Robbie even said to me afterwards that Halkett himself sees himself as a centre-back in the middle of a three.
Yeah.
But they think he's got enough.
They think quite niche for you, mate. You should probably be a centre-half, maybe a two.
Yeah.
they think he's got the ability to play on the right.
It does.
So that's something they're going to work on.
It's something that you look back to his Livingston days, and Craig Halkett was great at stepping out with the ball, playing into the midfield, and actually continuing his run quite often. His goal-scoring record for Livy was brilliant. His goal-scoring record in his first season at Hearts was brilliant because he was able to do that.
He did.
He's able to support attacks in such a way, and that kind of shows last season the success of the 3-4-3 for Hearts came from Stephen Kingsley on the left of it and John Souter on the right of it, either one of them driving forward with the ball, creating attacks that way. And, you know, Craig Halkett, he's not got the pace, he's not got the passing ability of John Souter. However, he does have the ability with the ball at his feet and the strength to then sort of hold people off, find the short passes. Getting him back in is massive. I think Michael Smith on right wing back actually played really well.
I don't think there was any poor performance in the Hearts team.
Can I ask just as an outsider, would you not want, if Halkett's playing on the right, and again, you're saying they both played well, but that with Smith and Halkett out there, does that not make Hearts vulnerable to certain wide players in the league? Would that not be a slight worry going forward?
No, like 100%, and I think we kind of saw it earlier on in the season, but obviously not for a very long time because he got injured. But against Zurich, they were able to expose that right-hand side because they were getting in behind Halkett because he didn't have that pace, and then his hamstring snapped, and that was kind of it. But I mean, the 3-4-3, I really enjoyed it last season because we had the constituent parts. Mm. I'm slightly more nervous this time because of the likes of Craig Halkett and Stephen Kingsley then playing in the middle of a back three.
I feel like it's a waste, Kingsley. I mean, you're talking...
I think he might play in the left when Rowles is back.
I think he will play in the left because Rowles will play in the middle.
When's Rowles due back?
Well, he's back next week. He's suspended.
Well, that makes more sense then, because it's like, so this is more like a stopgap because they've been, as you were saying, when they were in Spain, they were working on it. You don't just want to abandon it because one part. So, right, that makes sense. Because I was thinking, like, I mean, if you're going to put Halkett out there, that's all well and good. But I was like, surely to the detriment of Kingsley, surely you want him. He's always going to be better than Halkett as a wide centre half. Definitely.
And
always.
You would think, when Rowles comes, for the next game, you would think Halliday will drop out and Rowles.
That's a good back three. It's got, with Rowles, Halkett, and Kingsley, it's got so much balance, and they all contribute to each other's attributes.
Yeah, they can all step out as well, and that's something that Robbie's talked about quite a bit in terms of
the ball you see in a game. That's very important.
What he wants, because obviously the fans kind of, I think, a lot look at the three at the back or a back five as it is quite a lot of the time, because it is Alex Cochran and usually Michael Smith, who are two career fullbacks. Cochran's still quite young, but you know what I mean. So you tend to look at it and go, oh, is that a wee bit too negative? But Nielsen talks about the fact that he thinks the 3-4-3 contributes to attack a lot because they have the centre-halves that can step out, and once you step out, you start to create overloads.
And I would fully agree with that, because Alex Cochran had a goal disallowed for offside. Mm-hmm. He was just offside, but that was him, the furthest advanced player on the park. And in the first half...
And you want to see Craig Halkett getting in the opposition box as well, because he's very good at that.
And in the first half, Michael Smith was really advanced on the right-hand side, basically camped in Kilmarnock's half. And that sort of brings me to... the reason why I think Hearts were able to win this game, it was just a slight tweak to what everyone imagined it was going to be. Josh Ginnelly played as the number 9, and Lauren Shankland played as a sort of recessed number 10. And that threw Kilmarnock off completely. They've got zero pace at the back. And basically they play a bizarrely high-ish line, which meant that Ginnelly was just able to snaffle up everything, get in behind. He times his runs so well just now. Ginnelly is getting in behind so often. And the two goal scorers in the first half, Josh Ginnelly and Lauren Shankland, because Hearts were able to bamboozle Kelly's back line with that. And that also meant that Michael Smith was up supporting attacks, because Lauren Shankland isn't there to cross the ball in the box. You need width on the right. That allowed Michael Smith to then be there. It was a nice balance to the whole display and the whole team for Hearts.
And that's how you beat these sweaty, shite teams. No offence, Kilmarnock fans, but I'm sure they're well aware that their team's fucking rubbish. So when they sit in so much and you can't just be normal, it needs to be rotated men. You see all the big teams all do it. The reason they do that is because you can't just rely on everyone just playing in a position. People are going to get doubled up on, and it's going to be so deep that you're going to need to pull people out of position. One thing I wanted to add for Hearts is that I wasn't surprised to see Devlin and Snodgrass going together in midfield. That's a lovely duo. Talk about complementing each other. So there's so much. And with Keogh and Grant, just haven't really shown. It's not that they've been woeful all the time, but they've never looked like you can be like, I can hang my hat on them as good midfielders for Hearts.
I don't disagree, but what I would say is when it felt like it might get back to the wall for Hearts, Kelly had brought one back. Hearts put Keogh and Grant in the midfield, and Hearts regained possession and regained control of the
both
game.
Both of them maligned players, I think, so far in the Hearts career, but both played well.
Yeah, and George Grant especially, I really like him. I think he's got great feet, he's got a great touch, and he maintains possession. Mm-hmm. So actually, in a period of the game when you might be sort of giving the ball away a lot, which is what Hearts were doing, they were creating their own problems, you brought on George Grant, and all of a sudden you found that Hearts had possession for 2-3 minutes at a time. everything going through him, because he has the composure, the calmness that Snodgrass also has, but Snodgrass is a 35-year-old man who gets tired.
So yeah, you're not going to be, but you're going to use them both, aren't you?
100%. And I have to say as well, Snodgrass has been a great signing. I've been really
I was surprised it took so long for someone to do it.
Yeah, I've been really impressed since he came in. He's just so calm. He never loses the ball, and he's great in that way. But also,
and he's got those set pieces.
But also Keogh coming off the bench as well. I thought he did well, and he actually broke the lines a few times, sort of trying to get in behind, which was an aspect of his play that I hadn't seen before. So, no, listen, all in all...
He's usually good at other players breaking the lines past him.
Yeah. All in all, a good performance from Hearts, one that I was happy with. Obviously not delighted, because the second half there was a bit of a drop-off there. Losing a goal from a set piece is never good. Kilmarnock contributed not much to the game. I thought Alan Power actually had a good game in the centre of the park. I think him against Devlin was a really interesting wee battle.
That sounds fun, eh?
Dan Armstrong is niggly, and he just keeps running, and he creates, and he had a decent enough game. Bobby Wales coming in at the very last minute up front, I think he did what he did what he could. He was up against Craig Halkett.
On a bit of hiding and nothing.
He was up against Craig Halkett.
Dodge can't get a game against a 17-year-old laddie. It's not coming back for you, Dodge.
I actually thought Dodge looked okay when he came off the bench.
Doyle's looked okay because he offered something different. And he gave the Hearts back. Well, basically they went two up top after half time, which I think is what contributed to Killie coming back into it a wee bit. But yeah, Bobby Wales, I really enjoyed Craig Halkett stepping on his foot and his boot came off, and then as Bobby Wales was going to retrieve his boot, Halkett just booted it away. Just like thumped it about 20 yards away, and they just like turned
welcome to the big leagues. People throw your shoes.
Turned around to Willie Collin, was just like, I am wet. What are you going to do?
That Kilmarnock team, man. I'm just looking at it and my eyes are sore.
There's not much there. Joe Wright had an absolute abomination. He was at fault for all three goals. He was horrendous.
Paul Hanlon.
Yeah.
And Liam Donnelly. Just, yeah.
You cannot dine out on that small opening of the season where you scored like six goals. They were all penalties anyway.
Yeah, just funny reading Craig Anderson's responses like during the game when they're already a goal down.
Yeah, yeah.
And McEnroy's now not starting looking struggling a bit.
Well, he struggled because he was playing it.
He was playing left.
Aye, so it's just there's so much wrong with the team, and I support the team that's in the biggest free fall, so I mean, I'm maybe not in a position to start pointing fingers at who's going to go down, but I've thought Killie were. Like the worst team, man for man, the worst team on paper in the league, and the only reason we thought they would get anywhere is through Derek McInnes, and I still believe they've got the worst group of players.
Is that now 1 point from a possible 27 away from home for Killie this season?
Not great.
I know. They need to buck up their ideas, because I just the other day put a. This is thanks to Duncan Mackay and his pessimism. Fiver on Hibs to finish in the bottom two. 20-1.
Fuck off, Duncan. I mean, it's not a bad price.
It's 20-1 is a good price.
But the thing is, Hibs happen. Hibs might be able. Hibs might be able to.
Terry Butcher vibes.
It's not going to happen. Because they're both English.
No,
they both spit their heat open.
Right, that'll do us, I think.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
We're going over to Patreon.
Yes, we're going to go Patreon. We're going to talk about the World Cup. The end of the World Cup.
Fucking great.
Nice. Yeah.
Who's a come to try to watch Scottish football?
So if you'd like to listen to that, it's patreon.com/terracepodcast, and that will be on the £2 a month tier. Rob, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tony, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And I'm Craig Fowler. Until next time, enjoy your football. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.